Conciliums with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this.
What do you have to say, Pete?
Speaking of detergent.
did you just come up with a topic right there?
Yeah, I did. Well, it's something that's been bothering me on the walk over, which is really about the only 15-minute prep that I do. And that is something that I work in that people view with utter disdain and fear.
Something you work in.
Yes.
That people view with utter disdain
and fear. I work in clay, wood, and... it's not like an artist. Chemicals. Da, da, da. It's an easy topic for me.
Okay, is this going to be like making fun of the food blogger person who says, this is all full of chemicals, and then you say, everything is chemicals, and then...
No, that would be trite, and we are far above that trite level of treatment.
Are we? Okay, chemicals. What about chemicals?
So when I say chemicals, what do you think?
I think of plastic jugs filled with things.
Okay.
Usually stuff in solution.
Okay, so liquids is
what
you think.
That's what I think.
Okay,
when I think chemicals.
I guess that makes sense.
But also, as soon as you start thinking about it, then I can think, oh yeah, and then strips of magnesium that we used, and rock salt and things like that. Yeah, chemistry. I do not like the supposition of superiority that seems to happen in most every discipline. Right.
Ooh, this is interesting. Please explain.
Well,
you mean like library science?
Sure, sure. Although,
maybe we're getting off on a different topic.
No. Librarians have an ongoing inferiority complex that's shocking. No, I'm talking about the physics versus chemistry versus biology. Sort of everything is physics. Nothing happens without chemistry. We're all made of biology.
And if you do anything other than those three disciplines, you're crap.
Yeah, that sounds about right. But no, I briefly dated a physics major, and there was...
I don't want to talk about your sex life on this show. I mean...
Well, now we're going
to... Isn't this like PG
now
rated?
Now we're going to have to. I didn't want to either, but if you don't want to...
Okay.
No. And there was a streak of arrogance in everybody in that department, certainly. You know, she had it the least of anybody I'd ever talked to who was a physics major.
And at the time, were you an economics major or a stack major or both?
I think I was out of school by then.
Okay.
Yeah, I think. I can't remember. But it was
You can't remember a lot from that period.
It was a long time. Well, that period being my life.
One giant blackout year.
My point is, and I think that if you dig a little bit, you can find a memory of people doing this where they say sort of, my discipline is the most fundamental
to
the human experience, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And so everything is made of chemicals. Of course, things have chemicals. When you say it's full of chemicals, you're not saying anything. That, to me, is kind of a pissy little insistence that chemistry is the most important discipline.
Did I say that?
No. I'm just...
Some people do.
It's just what you made me think of. And now I sound like an asshole. How did you do that? That was like judo, Pete. Well,
it's
done.
It's magic.
You knew that I was going to throw that out, I think.
Ninja perspective. Oh!
It's sort of like saying to you, Republicans, Pete. Cobb County Republicans. And then I can just let you go and make a fool of yourself.
I'm just too tired to rant on that subject right now.
Oh, you're too tired.
I will say this, that, I watch, late night... pundit shows on MSNBC, and I can't even watch it
Is
anymore.
That the pundit shows are late night, or the pundits themselves are late night?
Both. I'm not sure what that means, but I'm going to go with both.
Sort of
both for 200, Alex.
Smoky, boozy, hey everybody, let's talk about politics, kind of.
Smoky, boozy, are they? No, not really, but Rachel Maddow does do a lot of cocktail moments with brown liquors. I think, did we discuss this before?
Well, Mark Maron mentioned that when he met her, he tried to suck up to her by saying, I'm eating vegan. And she's like steak and bourbon and cigarettes or something.
I think she did have a smoking issue. I don't know if she still smokes. But
Is that what we're calling them now? Smoking issues?
Smoking issues.
chemistry, chemicals. So what do you think of when someone says chemicals?
I don't know, but I think of the fact that people just hate it.
You don't know what you think?
You mention chemicals and people just, chemicals, chemicals bad, everything else in life good.
Isn't the thing about chemicals when people are using that phrase as a shortcut to describe something, they're talking about processing.
Are they?
Aren't they?
You sound like John Cusack in the movie.
I don't want to buy anything, sell anything, or process anything.
I don't want to sell anything that's processed.
I don't want to buy anything that's sold or processed. I don't want to sell anything that's bought or processed. And I don't want to process anything that's sold or bought.
But, okay, that's close, right? Do you remember it exactly?
I always remember him saying, like, stumbling over the end of it, where he says, "I don't want to process anything sold, bought." Like,
where he just was like,
I remember him sort of crumbling into
I'm
the
trying
end.
To indicate that I'm in some way bohemian, but it's failing miserably.
What are you going to do, Lloyd? Kickboxing? Sport of the future?
Is that what he said?
Yeah, man.
Oh, I forgot that. I got to watch that movie again. That was really kickboxing. Actually, if you think about mixed martial arts now and Ultimate Fighting League, he was right back then in the 80s.
He was, wasn't he?
John Cusack, a visionary.
Actually, Cameron Crowe, but hey, okay.
Oh, okay.
So
was Cameron Crowe the director?
Yeah, and the writer.
Okay. It's a good movie.
It was a good movie, Pete.
See, I like some of the movies you like.
Yeah, back. It's almost like there was an event in the past and our paths split, right? Like some kind of dimension
like a common
shearing,
ancestor.
Right?
But the missing link
in the early
80s, Say Anything.
We both like Say Anything in Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters is probably when it happened.
You think so? That
I
was
do.
The common ancestor
I think
that we
that
both had?
If you were going to do an alternate history of culture, right, that Ghostbusters, the release of Ghostbusters, that would be a good sort of spike to split, you know, realities, right? That would be a good one. Star Wars would be a good one, you know?
But I'm a fan of John Cusack, but one of my favorite films of his was The Sure Thing.
He's kind of crazy pants now, isn't he?
With Stephanie Zeninga. How do you pronounce her name?
Is that...
It was
what's
his co-star.
Happening? What are you doing?
Co-star. She was the one that
in
played
the, sure
the Princess Leia parody in Spaceballs.
I know who that is.
Do you know
okay.
that? Is it Stephanie Zeninga?
I have no more information.
It's Stephanie. I don't know.
I can just picture.
That's the Yiddish version.
I can
of
just
Zeninga.
Picture her face now.
Yeah. But it was such a good film. It was
that
about,
the road movie?
Yeah, it was kind of a road trip. And he liked her, and she liked him, and she was very systematic and organized, and he was fly-by-the-seat-of-the-pants kind of guy, and sometimes opposites attract. And
she's city, he's country.
And it was like she had a Filofax organizer, and they were trying to get together to meet about a project.
Do you remember the movie where Charles Grodin loses his day planner and Jim Belushi finds it? This was a movie. The whole conceit was that if you found the guy's planner, it had his whole life in it.
I vaguely recall
the trailer has Charles Grodin saying, "My whole life was in there."
Yeah, because that's the one where you had the little vinyl pouches where you could put your credit cards
and, so
and everything.
Keys and all that stuff. And yeah, that was.
Oh
whole...
yeah, and he had keys to like a vacation home.
Yep,
and he went and just moved in.
And Jim Belushi is the surviving brother, right? John Belushi was the
Jim Belushi is the surviving brother. Yes.
It's funny. I have a block. I can sometimes forget completely which Belushi.
No, that's okay.
Yeah.
I remember because they both went to Wheaton Central High School, and I grew up in Wheaton. So,
Pete, chemicals.
Yes.
Why do you resist the understanding of it's full of chemicals as this sort of processing thing? Like the, Chick-fil-A down in the food court. Advertises its lemonade. Water, lemons, Splenda, water, lemons, sugar. Trying to say there are no chemicals in it. That's what they're saying.
Yeah.
Then, of course, one could say, no, all of those are chemicals or made of chemicals, right? Isn't that the kind
of... Yeah, and we're not going to make that silly argument.
My understanding of that argument is that it's stupid. Do you also think it's stupid?
Right, but we're not even going to get into that.
But I mean, okay. Okay.
I mean, that's
I'll
just confusion.
You know, you're asking, right. you're asking yeah. to back
off. So we're not
going to
pick on people because they don't realize that all substances technically are chemicals.
Do you happen to have a Coca-Cola bottle on you?
No.
Let's look up the ingredients of Coca-Cola.
Well, of course, the one thing that's missing is the small amount that's in the flavor.
The natural flavors?
Right, but it's basically
the secret herbs and spices.
Water, carbonation, sugar, phosphoric acid, which is a scary one. Gives it sort of a tarty taste. But this is the thing that will dissolve anything. Phosphoric acid is used as a...
I have asked the internet to tell me. Carbonated water, high fructose corn syrup, caramel color, phosphoric acid, natural flavors, caffeine. You know, it's a testament to today's world that I am surprised that there aren't more things in the Coca-Cola. You know? Like, why isn't there xanthan gum in there?
Because it doesn't need to be thickened.
How about Wonder Bread ingredients?
So I guess what I'm saying is, I will not take that arrogant view of saying, well, dearie, it's chemicals. You wouldn't understand.
Here we go. I think this might be this is the kicker. I am now reading the Wonder Bread ingredients, a picture of the ingredient list that's been put on the internet. Pete, you're going to have to help me with the pronunciation of some of these. Whole wheat flour, water, wheat gluten, high fructose corn syrup. How do you say that word?
Honey.
Oh, yeah. Molasses, yeast. Okay. And then contains 2% or less of wheat bran, soybean oil, salt. Now here it goes. Calcium sulfate. Right. Dough conditioners. Sodium sterile.
Steroil.
Lactulate.
Ethoxylated mono or and diglycerides,
calcium dioxide, and or
azo dicarbonamide,
soy flour, yeast nutrients, ammonia chloride, ammonium
sulfate and or monocalcium phosphate.
That's a good one. Vinegar, calcium propionate. What's that?
Let's see. So
that's to retain
it's a
freshness.
Propionate.
Whey and soy
lecithin.
So
which is a soybean oil. I mean,
this is probably what people are thinking of when they say it's full of chemicals, right?
Yeah.
And it's 2% or less of that stuff, but still, all that's in there. Whereas when I make bread at home, it's flour, water, yeast, salt.
You might put in some double-acting baking powder, which has tartaric acid and sodium bicarbonate
I do not. Put baking powder.
But some people
in
do when
bread.
They bake. Some people do.
I do that in
I do if I'm making
biscuits, right?
Yeah, so we could look all this stuff up, but a lot of these are just simple salts, and they're there either to help this stuff rise, or you don't put in preservatives.
Yeah.
Right, so anything from butylated hydroxytoluene to sodium ascorbate
are
there to keep it from getting stale.
I kind of wish I had put in some preservatives because my bread starts to mold.
Well, so that's the trade-off. I guess, you talk about the arrogance of people that work in the chemical sciences. I try to spend my life...
No. Whoa, stop.
Oh.
It's not arrogance of the people who work in the chemical sciences. I'm talking about the essential arrogance of the statement that, you said chemicals, and there's chemicals in everything. It's all chemicals.
Right.
We're all made of chemicals, so that's stupid. It might be ignorant, but it's not stupid. Right?
Wait, what's not stupid?
When someone says, I don't want to eat that, it's full of chemicals.
Oh, no, and I'm not picking on people for that. So if you look at these things, I guess what I spend my time trying to do is to say, look them up. So, for example, if you go to the Center for Science and the Public Interest... They actually have a list
that's
of a lot
a
of these things.
That's a good center. Who funded that center?
Well, that's a good question. Who does fund this thing? I look things up there all the time.
It's going to be the Koch brothers.
The Koch brothers. Let's see. The board. Let's see who's on the board. And admittedly, their view of a particular chemical changes all the time. You have to go a little beyond this sometimes. It's basically Washington, D.C. I see a lot of the members on the board are from Washington, D.C. They don't tell them where they come from, though. They're just people. A lot of doctors, right? Which makes sense.
Just folks. Folks at a center.
And some just folks. The chair is Mr. Tom DeGasse. Accomplishments board, staff, funding. Ooh, let's look them up.
Okay.
The Center for Science and the Public Interest is primarily funded by the 900,000 subscribers to its Nutrition Action Health Letter.
Okay, well, I got to say,
individual
I like
donors.
The sound of that. That's sort of like Consumer Reports.
So that's kind of interesting. One of my colleagues who works with folks at Emory, and I should look her up. We did a show with her on Inside the Black Box. Let me see if I can find her.
Is that Science Only Funnier, Wednesdays at noon on WREK
Atlanta? 91.1 FM. And of course, last week we talked with the Andy Weir, the author of the, or not Andy Weir. We talked with.
You wish
the,
you talked to Andy Weir.
We wish we talked with Andy Weir. If you went to the Maker Faire Atlanta in downtown Decatur.
Which I did.
Did you? What day did you go?
Went Sunday.
Did you see Andy Weir's interview?
Nope.
I didn't either. It was supposedly packed.
I saw Lou Lefton.
I saw Lou Lefton when I was there.
And my daughter fired a trebuchet.
Oh, okay. They were little ones, though, so it's not they were, like, flinging a piano.
It was pretty big to her. No, it was not a piano.
Well, to her it was big, yeah. What were they flinging?
We should build a trebuchet that could throw a piano.
Trebuchet.
Would that be a piano in the
in
hanger?
In the sling.
And then, like, six pianos in the weight?
Well, or you know, put big cement blocks or something like that.
Do you have some big cement blocks?
No.
But let's build a trebuchet.
So did you learn the principle behind a trebuchet? The French weapon that is half catapult, half sling. And you add, you know, the velocity from those two elements, those two machines. That's why trebuchets can fling stuff.
I believe it's all about leverage.
It is. But, I mean, if you think about it, a catapult, you know, sort of has a spring that whips an arm. But then if you add a sling onto the end of the arm, which is what that flexi rope thing is, that's the technical term for it, flexi rope thing.
Isn't a catapult like a giant crossbow? Isn't that the kind of the weird thing? Like what we think of as a catapult is not actually a catapult.
No, I think if you take a sling and you add it to a catapult, that's what a trebuchet is. So you get an added boost. I would think of a crossbow as just a catapult.
A little added swing.
That don't mean a thing. Doo-wop, 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 doo-wop. Sorry.
I wasn't sure where you were going with that. That was pretty good.
The eyes were turning.
All right, what do you want to talk about?
Well, it's funny because these folks at Georgia Tech and Emory came up with a quiz to test your scientific literacy. And one of the questions was...
I am always frightened to take tests like that.
No. One of them was,
scientific literacy,
do you tend to believe this
crumbling
or that? It actually tested your ability to recognize conflict of interest. It was a very simple test. And if you read medical journals, conflict of interest is kind of scary because they are required to report any potential conflict of interest. But when you read a study that's on product A and the cost of the study was paid for by the company that makes product A, you should be wary.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always, and that's actually what that question tested. I thought it was a good question.
I find it funny that full disclosure has been kind of corrupted into just a phrase to describe. I'm going to be frank with you now. You know, full disclosure, I love the Die Hard movies or something like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas full disclosure is an important principle.
It is, but I think a lot of people disclose it and then you realize, oh my God, this is rife with conflict of interest. I'm not sure I should believe this.
What's the phrase, money is like water on the sidewalk?
It is.
It finds every crack and crevice.
Yeah, sometimes it does. I agree with that. I guess what I'm saying is, how do I get people to say...
Chemicals.
You know, chemicals are just chemicals. Some are bad. Some are good. Some are in between. You know, go to the...
chemicals like technology? Is that what you're trying to say?
I guess they are. How insightful of you. All right, can you bring back that Wonder Bread thing there?
I don't know if I want to.
Let's look at food safety. Food additives.
Boom. Wonder Bread ingredients. So, you ever heard about how Rice-A-Roni was invented?
I think you told me that before. But refresh my memory.
No, it's just, I'm just reminded
somebody
of... Someone left a pile of rice on top of a stove and it melted and they said, oh, vulcanized rice. No, listen. I'm just thinking about prepared foods and the sort of prepackagedness of... the 1950s. That's all I'm thinking of. And Wonder Bread. When did Wonder Bread come out?
I don't know.
When was Wonder Bread a wonder? Are you going to look up some of these chemicals? Do I need to fill time?
No, but you did mention a trade-off, though. And when I lived in Europe, I used to go into the grocery store and buy this brown, wonderful bread with this textured crust. And it tasted great, and it was warm on the grocery store shelf.
Yeah.
And in 2 days, it was a giant crouton if you didn't eat it. I mean, it was rock hard. You couldn't even bite it with your teeth. So that's the trade-off you make. You don't want the preservatives. you better eat your bread in 2 days.
I learned in college a way of buying groceries and eating, which was really sort of a stash mentality. You know, we have this stuff here. Uh-huh. And when I open it, then I'll eat it. That was kind of, you know, you could, like, how long can Pop-Tarts sit on the shelf, right? Or peanut butter. You can open peanut butter and close it up and let it go for a while, you know, yeah. and a sleeve of saltines, mm-hmm. right? As long as you don't pop open those saltines, they can sit up on the shelf for a while, right?
Yeah, and now that's due to the technology of packaging, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Doesn't let oxygen through. It's pretty good.
Packaging and some preservatives, right? And I think that how to say, you can learn how to do that early on, and then it will continue, and it will inform how you think of what your day should contain. And
what?
Okay.
How do you get from food packaging to what your day is doing?
So if you take an hour to cook your breakfast, an hour to cook your lunch, and an hour to cook your dinner, and those are not correct times in the sense that it might, you know, an hour to cook breakfast is crazy, but just say that, okay? Then that's 3 hours of your day that you know are locked in, right? Mm-hmm. And travel time to your home, you know, I'm not going to work 15 miles away from my house if I'm going to go home and cook myself lunch, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's in Italy, when Casey and I stayed there for a while, the town kind of shut down in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Everybody went home for a meal, right? And it was just understood. That's how it worked, you know, and there was one restaurant that was open all day, you know, that you could go in and get a meal at the sort of quote wrong time or the right. a different time because they lived however far away they lived. So they just came to town
restaurant, yeah.
and they just cooked for, you know, for the day. Yeah. And that was a good restaurant.
No, when I lived in Zurich, Switzerland, it was the same way. Grocery stores weren't open till 11 o'clock right. at night or 24 hours a day.
So the jump is, so if that's how your life is,
yeah.
right, then that's built in. And then your work day is going to be affected by that. That's yeah. going to be prime, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to be how your day goes, and then you fit work into it. Whereas if you start learning how to package and, you know, get stuff on the go or, you know, have your food handed to you through a window or, you know, across a counter, then you start thinking, oh, I'll just grab something to eat, and then you're adding time for something else. And
yeah.
you could be a huge hedonist and be like, you know, I want more time to go, you know, get high or, you know, watch movies. And so I'm going to get packaged. Or you could be someone who is wild crazy about their productivity. So, mm-hmm. you know, I always eat on the go. I eat a sandwich with one hand while I type with the other. Or even just, you know, I can spend more time in the office if I don't have to cook.
Mm-hmm.
And then people can even get a little crazier than that and start talking about how, you know, hegemony of the patriarchy is making them, you know, home cook a meal, and somehow that's mind control.
How did you get the mind control on that?
I read an essay.
But anyway, the point is, I don't know which one of those lifestyles is better.
Right, right. But you
see, they both have pluses and minuses.
You see what I mean yeah. now, that it can inform yeah. how you live.
No, when I lived in Zurich, Switzerland, we took a much more formal break for lunch. Mm-hmm. And you took a morning Café pausa, coffee break, and you
did
took
you
an
say
afternoon.
Café pausa?
Yeah, we were in.
Is that a Kafka thing?
We were no, that's just coffee break in German.
Gregor
we were
Samsa,
in northern
after
Switzerland.
A morning of uneasy memos, sat in a cafe to find himself transformed.
But your
into
life
a giant
was like
hedonist.
That. So in the chemistry building, there was the Chemie Bar. That's what they called it, the chemistry bar, and it had little pastries and espresso and coffee and juices. And we would go there in the morning, and we would go there in the afternoon. But we wouldn't sit around eating sun chips all day in the office, right? So you were much more focused when you were in the office. And then you specifically took a systematic break to recharge the batteries. And I see advantages of both sides, right? I think you may be more productive in the office when you know you're going to have a break to sort
yeah.
of recharge your brain. Whereas we'll just work constantly and then we'll veg out and we'll find ourselves wasting time cruising through the internet because maybe I'm looking up something legitimate on the internet. And then
and maybe you're just
on the right
to let
hand
your brain
side
have
is
a little bit of time off.
11 celebrities who were fat when they were kids. And I can't help but click on that thing.
So, Pete, why are we talking about chemicals?
I think people are just afraid of them. So, for example, wasn't one of them calcium steroyl lactylate?
That sounds kind of correct.
Yeah, and if you think about it, and you look it up at the food additive glossary for the Center for Science and the Public Interest, it actually gives it a green check mark, which says that it's not only been approved by the FDA, but they actually believe it's okay. It's a dough conditioner, a whipping agent for bread dough, cake fillings.
I'm sorry, a whipping agent?
Whipping agent that if you whip something together, it actually gets it to rise and stay there. Artificial whipped cream, processed egg whites, these sorts of things. It says these additives strengthen bread dough so it can be used in commercial bread-making machinery and help produce a more uniform grain and greater volume. So you've got machines that are plunking this into these little pans and things like that. But if you think about it, it's nothing more than soap. It's
right.
Nothing more than the same lipids and glycerides that exist in your body. And you can't always say, well, it's kind of like natural stuff, and put it in there. You have to be careful about that, because every once in a while, there's one tiny little atom out of place that does crazy things. But for the most part...
One atom out of place.
Yeah, or like one methyl group out of place, for example.
Now, a methyl group sounds like it's going to do a lot more than one atom.
No, a methyl group is just a carbon with... It's just four atoms.
We're a mean methyl group.
Is that a grunge band from Seattle?
So my half-assed joke about the patriarchy came from...
This picture?
Let's Stop Idealizing the Home-Cooked Family Dinner by Amanda Marcotte from XX Factor, What Women Really Think, September 3rd, 2014, on Slate, in which one of her... her conclusion is that... the main reason that people see cooking mostly as a burden is because it is a burden. It's expensive and time-consuming and often done for a bunch of ingrates who would rather just be eating fast food anyway. If we want women, or gosh, men too, to see cooking as fun, then these obstacles need to be fixed first, and whatever burden is left needs to be shared.
How do you fix those obstacles, though?
Oh, to be honest, reading this, it really felt like someone just said, you know what I want to do? I want to, put the screws to the whole cooking at home thing and then built it backwards.
Well, do you know how my wife and I do that?
How do you do that?
Chemicals.
No, nice.
Not chemicals. But we try to find simpler stuff. And sometimes that involves taking the frozen pizza and cooking it and making a salad with it. And sometimes you have to do that. And it's not so bad. And I will say this. The nice thing about modern packaging laws... basically says you have to put all those green ingredients on there. Mm-hmm. So you can look at these ingredients in Wonder Bread, which we think of as just a complete chemical fiasco, right? Isn't Wonder Bread the icon that we use to make fun of chemically laced foods?
I don't know. Probably the Twinkie?
Maybe. And the Twinkie, these foods that hang around for a long time have a lot of preservatives. The preservatives are mainly antioxidants. Some of them are things like... ascorbic acid, right? So this is basically vitamin C. Vitamin C is a natural antioxidant. And all it does is it grabs... Oh, here we go. Seven worst ingredients in food. Let's go through them.
This is the internet telling us something.
Wow, so they have both artificial sweeteners and high fructose corn syrup. Yeah.
And then down here...
And they have preservatives.
Artificial flavors.
No, so I will say this. No, I don't believe that. Visit the page. Who put this crap up there?
We're not doing that.
The point is, some of these things are bad, but if you put in some basic calcium salts or things like that, like sodium ascorbate, there's a trade-off. If you put in a little bit of this stuff that keeps your food edible for an extra day or two, and otherwise you'd throw it out and lose money and go on welfare.
Are you saying buy local?
Well, buy local's a good thing too, because it's simple. It cuts down on transportation costs.
Yes.
Right, but buy local, my God, if you go into one of these fancy schmancy, I don't want to pick on Whole Foods, but I'm going to.
Whole Foods is not local.
It's okay. Well, but Whole Foods claims that some of their stuff comes local.
I'm sure some of it is, but also it's not.
Right.
You know, buy local is it's not a not a feel. It's not a.
It's an actual thing.
Yeah, you buy from local farmers. You buy from local.
But you can't drive out into the country and get it there.
They drive in. That's
yeah, so you have happens. To find the local farmers market, the local places where you can get those sorts
this
of things.
This is turning into an advice podcast all of a sudden. Let's not do that.
But I'm going to say, whether it comes to chemicals or buying local, you have to find a balance that helps you survive.
A scientific understanding or a scientific explanation of why buy local is a good thing. Because it doesn't food doesn't have to be transported.
Right. But the chemical thing...
If food doesn't have to be transported, it doesn't have to be treated in any way.
Right. You can't tell by the name, unless you're a chemist, if it's really bad. So go to websites like Center for Science in the Public Interest, look up their glossary of food additives, and see what they say about these things. And some of them, you know, because grandma used to put pectin and other things, which are cross-linking agents,
I think
in your jelly.
Some useful information was just delivered on this podcast.
What was that?
You said go visit the thing to find out the stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do now. There's been like a useful life-affirming thing to, you know, that you said on the podcast. I don't think we can...
When were you replaced by Christopher Walken? I don't know here.
Read the name of the website again.
Center for Science in the Public Interest, and it's got a weird thing. It's like www.cspint.org.
Say that again.
So Center for Science in the Public Interest, look it up, and you can just search for it. And you can
look it. Google it, dummies.
Yeah, and it's not the only. Oh, you're a library person using Google as a verb.
You notice that I ended dummies. Ended that phrase with dummies.
I guess the point is, don't assume that everything that has a funky sounding chemical name is always bad.
Tell me again why you were thinking this.
I was just—I don't. Maybe I was feeling persecuted because I'm a chemical engineer. So, for example, high fructose corn syrup—that's a tough one. I think we've talked about that before. You know, I mean, sugar is bad for you if you eat too much of it, right? Tooth decay, it makes you fat.
Tell me more about this persecution, Pete.
Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just feeling persecuted as a chemical engineer.
Because
everyone's, you know, it ebbs and flows. I mean, everybody needs a bad guy. And, you know, about every 8 months, the bad guy is, well, these chemicals are bad. And we do have some problems. We have some problems with our overuse of chemicals. And actually, looking at some of the ingredients you showed me here, it's nice to have, you know, relatively simple, straightforward lists of chemicals on most of these things. And yes, kudos to Chick-fil-A for just putting, you know, lemons, water, and sugar, or lemons, water, and sweetener. This website that you said, get rid of artificial sweeteners. Artificial sweeteners are a tough one. My suggestion to you is to drink artificial sweeteners that have been around for a long, long time. And that includes crazy things like sodium saccharide and cyclamates, which at one time were considered carcinogenic and horrible. But Europe never stopped using them. And we've used them for 40, 50 years now. And there doesn't appear to be significant long-term effects. I know what you're thinking. Well, in 0.1%, we have correlated this with this sort of thing. But you could do that with anything.
That's not what I was thinking.
What were you thinking?
My favorite artificial sweetener is either Kelly Ripa or Disney. Let's record another outro.
Okay.
Consilience with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities. Why? This feels so fake.
Do it anyway.
Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Bennett Radio and Pete Ludovus.
Or you can find us on the back porch of Rocky Mountain Pizza in Midtown Atlanta drinking cheap beer.